Well, last week we began a new series looking at the Psalms of Ascent. There are 15 of them, Psalm 120 through 134. And we began that last week. And today we will be looking shortly at Psalm 121. I'm sure you're aware that there's been an awful lot in the papers over the last year or two about the whole subject, quite an emotive subject, of absent fathers. And there has been really quite a large public reaction to this subject. Those kind of men that seem to lay down their responsibilities when it comes to their children. The Tory leader, David Cameron, in February this year, had this to say. He said, we need to make it as socially unacceptable for fathers to avoid their responsibilities as drink driving is now. But of course, it isn't simply about just extracting money from people, and it isn't really just simply the men that are those that go astray. It's not always the men, it can be the women sometimes that cause this kind of breakup and neglecting of responsibility. But why is it such a stigma? Why is there such a stigma that seems to be attached to absent fathers? Why do they come in for such a lot of stick? Well, I think part of the answer to that is the very fact of the importance of the presence of somebody. You know, imagine when people grow old and they're married and then one of the partners dies. You know, it's such a big shock, isn't it? Because they come home and the house is empty. It's just them. And they don't have the presence of that other partner alongside them anymore. Maybe you've been home alone, as they say, when you're used to being with somebody else. And there you are. You're in the house overnight on your own. And you hear every bump. You hear every noise. And you think to yourself, you know, is there somebody downstairs? And you listen out, you can't sleep well. I'm sure we all know that kind of experience. And it's all because of the presence of somebody else. It might not even matter who that person is. Just the very fact there is somebody else around means a lot. I was watching that TV film, it's a very old one, made by Tom Cruise called Castaway. And he ends up after a plane crash on a desert island. And he's all alone, there's nobody else there on this desert island, apart from a football that washes up, a football. And he makes this football he puts a face on it, and he gives it some hair, and he makes it into a person. He starts to talk to it over time. He talks to this football, he names it Wilson. And it just spells out all the more how we need company. God said in the scriptures, he made man, he made woman. You know, it's not good for man to be alone. He needs a companion. Needs somebody else to have alongside him. And this isn't really a sermon on marriage and singleness. Of course, single people are not on their own. They have many other people around about them. This is not really a sermon on that sort of subject. But I want us to look at Psalm 121. So perhaps if you've got a Bible, it's there on page 622, I think it is. 622. Page Psalm 121. I just want to read those 8 verses to us. Psalm 121, a song of ascent. I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, from the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and evermore. It's a beautiful psalm, a very lovely psalm. And the starting point in this psalm, if you look in verse 1, is the hills. There you have the psalmist. He's set out on his journey, and these psalms, in a sense, are all about a journey that a pilgrim is making, along with fellow pilgrims, up to Jerusalem 3 times a year for the 3 annual festivals. That was what they did, and they, as they walked, as they journeyed, they would sing. They would sing to each other. But in the meantime, he's looking up to the hills, and what we discover is that a deep question forms in his mind. I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? And my question to you this morning is, why does he ask this deep question? What is it that causes him to ask that kind of a question? As he looks to the hills, maybe he scans the horizon, he sees all the hills. and then this question comes out. Now, a number of people have when they look at the hills, have a very sort of positive view of them. They think that the psalmist saw something really good as he looked at these hills. And one of the suggestions is that the hills were those places where God did things. Remember, for example, Mount Sinai. The Lord God gave the Ten Commandments to Moses on Sinai, on a mountain. Look at, for example, Elijah. The prophet Elijah, there he was on the mountain, Mount Carmel, where he had that great victory over the prophets of Baal. Think about Abraham. There he goes up Mount Moriah, and he sacrifices, he's about to sacrifice his only son, and of course God provides for him, Jehovah Jireh gives him a ram instead of his son to be that sacrifice. So really, the mountains, the hills, can be that place of God's wonder working. But maybe that could be the case. It could be simply that as he looks at these hills, he thinks of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the ultimate destination where he's heading. And all around Jerusalem there are hills. So maybe as he looks at the hills, he thinks of that final destination, that end of his journey that he's got in mind. Well, these are possibilities. But for myself, I think really the hills represent something more troubling, more sinister, rather than pleasant and positive. Now, why do I say that? Well, for three reasons, really. I think the first is that the hills, if you read the history of Israel, you will know that the hills were one of those besetting places. They were a place of temptation for the Israelites. There it was that they built all the kind of altars for the Baals, which caused them so much trouble in their lives. So it could be a place of evil. The second possibility is this, that as they looked for the hills, they realized that their journey was not going to be an easy one. It wasn't going to be a particularly short one for most of them, because obviously Israel is a largest country, and some would have come all the way from the south, some from the north, to come all the way to Jerusalem. And so they looked for the hills, it reminded them, you know, we have a long journey ahead of us. And it's not going to be an easy one, it's not going to be plain sailing. We have to go through the hills, you know, Israel is a mountainous country. We have to go through these hills, through the passes, up the hills, down the valleys. And there were many dangers there. You could simply twist your foot, twist your ankle, fall down, break a bone or something. And you couldn't exactly get on your mobile phone to get 999, an ambulance to arrive within a few minutes. So it was a place of danger. The other possibility was, of course, that the mountain represented those kind of hideouts. You see, the pilgrims, as they journeyed, they were going up to worship. That was what they were going to do. And they would not go empty-handed. They would take their tithes, their offerings to the Lord. Maybe when they got to Jerusalem, they would then convert that money into some other form, maybe into animals that would be used in the sacrifices. And so the bandits, those that lived maybe in the hills, in the hideouts there, in the caves, they recognized here were rich pickings as these pilgrims would make their way up to Jerusalem. So it was a dangerous place. So why this question? Why does he say, where does my help come from? Why is that question in his mind? Well, I think the simple answer is because he realizes that he is one that needs help. I wonder whether, for yourself, as you consider the pilgrimage, the Christian walk through life, whether you consider that sooner or later, you're going to be faced with situations that are actually beyond your control, beyond your ability to cope, beyond the scope of your control. And whether or not you recognize that as far as you are concerned, you need help in your life. Many of us are very resourceful. And you know, our resourcefulness is good on the one hand. It's great that we've got resources, great that we've got skills, ability, talent. Maybe we're very clever, who knows? We can have all these things, but that's positive. But on the other side, the negative of that is that we feel we don't really need anything because we're so good, we're so clever. We've got, you know, £10,000 in the bank or something, who knows what it is. And we can start to look to those things and lose hold of the fact that we need God, that we have Him as our help. Over the past month or so, I've been reading a love story. It's not Milton Boone, but it's a love story, and it's a true story, and by all accounts, quite a sort of a whirlwind romance. The young chap, from the very time that he first meets this girl, it's only a few months till the time that he produces that box with the diamond ring in it, that I suppose every girl waits to have. I don't know how big the girl, but I believe that may be the case. And on the very day that the girl receives the ring, they go along this beach, and on the outward stretch, as they walk along this beautiful sandy and sunny beach, as they enjoy the fresh air, the gulls swooping, and all of that, as they walk along the beach, they discuss how the boy is going to break the news to the girl's dad, and they talk about that and what sort of reaction he's likely to get. And then as they turn around to retrace their steps, they begin to become more serious in their discussions. They start to think about the longer term. How are they going to make it through? Are they going to make it through? When times get difficult, when it's not sunny and beautiful and warm and all gorgeous, when things get more difficult, how are they going to cope? The girl's name was Margaret, and she observed ominously that the sea had already washed away one of their sets of footprints. And so she says, maybe that's what's going to happen to us. Maybe we're going to get all washed away, just like these footprints. She turns to her intended, who's called Paul. And he says, well, no, I think what will happen is, you know, when we come to our marriage day, then the two of us will become one, and that's going to be like the one set of prints. But Margaret's not entirely satisfied, and more questions come. She says, well, will we have what it takes to weather the troubled waters? What will happen when trouble comes that we can't handle? And she stops still and points, you know, look, oh, now there is only one set of prints left in the sand. Paul sighed and was silent for a moment, as if there weren't really any answers left to give. So then he squeezes her hand and says, Marge, when the most troublesome times come, the neither of us can handle, that's when the Lord will carry us both. Well, that couple, just like the writer of Psalm 121, was standing still and weighing up the future, considering how they would manage in their time of greatest need. And hence, I think, this reflective question that he asks. I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? Where will my help come from on that day, should it arise? I want to make it a little bit more personal this morning and ask you, how do you stand in regard to that? How do you look at your life in the future? Maybe you feel, well, I'm quite self-sufficient. I haven't really had any needs that I haven't been able to meet, and I don't particularly think that as time goes on I will face things that I can't manage. I shall be alright. But we have to ask ourselves, you know, what are we ultimately depending on? You know, are we depending perhaps on our good works? Will we ultimately depend on our good works to get us through with God? Are we depending on the fact that maybe we can buy credit in some way with God? I think it's about as equivalent as trying to go shopping in Tesco's with a bag load of potatoes and expect to still be able to get through the checkout. You know, God tells us that all our good deeds, all our wonderful deeds, are really like filthy rags in His sight. When they're laid up against His standard, they turn out looking like filthy rags. Maybe this morning you're in a rather different place. Maybe this morning you find yourself feeling, well, I know well enough that I can't always cope. Maybe you're in a very bad place this morning. That you would say, well, you know, on a scale from 1 to 10, I'm on a 2, maybe not even on a 2, maybe on a 1. And if that is the case, then I'd say this psalm is definitely for you this morning. It's a truth I've observed over many years that we do come to crossroads in our lives. We do come to those sort of milestone points in our lives. And God has a way of getting our attention at those particular times. He's got a very clever way that he manages to intercept us at particular points in our lives. And just meeting on Friday, this Christian lady, she was standing at the bookstore and was looking at one of the books about how to cope in when times get hard. And I started to talk to her, and this was the lady we prayed for earlier on. And it struck me that that was one such time when, just at the time when she needs to hear a word, just at the time when she needs to have a certain encouragement, God sends people, God makes a connection. God is the master artist in making connections in your life. At that moment when you think, all hell is breaking loose in my life, God has a way of coming alongside you. Many, many years ago, when my wife was heavily pregnant with one of our children, with David, in fact, she got up, she woke up in the middle of the night, unusually, and she couldn't get back to sleep, and so she thought, felt a very strong feeling that she should read Psalm 121, that psalm, that psalm number came into her mind, and she thought, I really need to just get up and read this psalm, it won't get out of my head, I can't get back to sleep. So she got up and she read the psalm, and the one that we've just read now, and then she went back to bed and went off to sleep, not really having any particular idea why she seems to have been woken up, why that particular psalm just kept impressing itself on her mind. But later on in the day, she had to go to a routine antenatal check-up appointment. And when they took her readings, did all her blood pressure and all those sorts of things, they did almost infernal. I'm afraid you're going to have to stay. We're going to have to admit you directly into the hospital because you're in a very bad way. You have a particular condition which we need to monitor very carefully. And so God knows what we're going to need. We didn't know that everything was going to change on that particular day, but God did know, and God sent that particular psalm to my wife as something that she would be able to hold on to. It was only at that point that she realized why it was that this psalm, I lift up my eyes to the hills, where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. It's because of that that she was able to remain strong and not to fall apart with that news. Well, the remainder of our time, as time's moving on, I just want to look at the remaining verses that we have here. Let me just make a couple of points. The structure of this psalm is a very simple one. You have a question in verse 1. In verse 2, you have the answer to it. That's where his help comes from. It comes from the Lord, from Yahweh. And then in verses 3 to 8, the rest of the psalm, you get kind of, if you like, an exploration or an explanation of this particular question and answer. Let me just point out one other thing to you. You notice that in the first two verses, the psalmist speaks in the first person. He says, I, he speaks about my. But as you get on to verse 3 through to verse 8, it moves on from the first person singular to the second person. It starts to talk about you and your. And the reason that people say about this is that the psalmist, one of them, they're all moving to Jerusalem together, they're on a journey together, and one of the psalmists strikes up and he speaks his own testimony, verses 1 and 2, and then the rest of the people with him join in and they give their testimony, and they start to sing verses 3 through to 8. Now the keynote of this psalm is very, very easy to find, because it is that keynote of watching or keeping. In the Hebrew it's actually the same word. For six times we get the same word, so it's not very difficult to find out what it's all about. It's all about watching, keeping. And in particular, it's all about God's personal presence with us. You can't help but notice the way in which God's presence is ever-present. He is omnipresent. He is totally present for us. There is a very amazing set of verses right towards the end of the Bible in Revelation and chapter 21. And then the most astonishing verses, Revelation 21 and verse 3, it says, I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. It's an amazing thing that God is actually going to make his home with us. Isn't that amazing? God is going to come and make his home with us. His presence is going to be total with us. We're going to see him, as the scripture says, face to face. That day is coming. However, even though we've not got to that day yet, that doesn't mean to say God's presence is not actually with us, that he's somewhere else in heaven on some cloud somewhere. But God's presence is very immediate. In verse 5, we read that the Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. He's at your right hand. He's right alongside you. You know, it's very well documented that many children, when they have behaviour problems, are really crying out for attention. That's what they're doing. Their behaviour problems betray that cry for attention. They're sort of crying out saying, notice me, notice me. Obviously, somewhere along the line, they haven't been given much attention. However, the Christian doesn't, or certainly shouldn't, cry out because they don't have God's attention. But what they should cry out is because they recognize they do have God's attention, that they do have God's presence in their lives. It should be one of those things that just makes us break out spontaneously in great joy. The fact that God is very present, very close to us, very involved with our lives. Let's look at some of the involvements of God in our lives. First of all, we notice there that God is one who never slumbers, he never sleeps. I know a number of people who are security guards, and one of the problems they face is that of staying awake. And they have to phone in, I think it is, or give some sort of contact every hour or so to let people know, yes, I haven't actually fallen asleep on duty. And so it's quite an issue for them to be able to find a way to actually stay awake when there's not an awful lot to do apart from just keep a lookout. But with God, we recognise that he is a God who operates 24/7, never leaves us. Even in the middle of the night when we're slumbering away, God is not slumbering. He is wide awake, and he is even acting on our behalf even when we sleep. So 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, he never slumbers, never sleeps. Also, we learn that our foot will not slip. Verse 3, he will not let your foot slip, he watches over you, you will not slumber. That's a great thing, isn't it, to know that God won't let you slip. Now, it doesn't mean to say that your life is totally, in every regard, cushioned. God doesn't do that. You know, life does have its knocks, and we do have, sometimes, accidents. However, it doesn't mean to say that God isn't watching over us. It doesn't mean to say that God isn't permitting that thing to happen in our lives. Now, this is a broken world we live in. That's a reality. We all know that. We ourselves are broken. We cause other things to break ourselves. That's a reality. However, the things that God lets happen, because he sees them happening, he sees they're going to happen, he permits them, doesn't he, into our lives. He permitted Job to suffer for a long time, but then he did restore him. He taught him, he restored him, and he ended up better than when he began. Third thing we notice is that God shades us from all the extreme conditions. He keeps us from things that are really going to harm us. We hear a lot about, sun and skin cancer, don't we? Well, we read here that God protects us not just from the sun that harms us by day, he protects us from the moon. I don't know whether you know where that word lunacy came from, but it comes from what people believed was the harmful effects of the moon, that lunar sort of feature of our universe. People felt that as the moon shone upon them, it would cause them to go mad. And so that word lunacy. So God protects us during the day, during the night, in every situation. Not only that, we notice there that he, at the end of the psalm, that he watches over us, both in our coming and in our going. You know, it was the prayer of Solomon, that amazing king who came after King David. He said, you know, I'm like a child. He said, I need your wisdom because I don't know how to come in and go out before the people. You know, God gave him all the wisdom he needed to come in, to go out. And God is with us as we go out to our work, as we come back home, we're at rest again. God is with us in all those situations. Derek Kidner, the Bible commentator, puts these verses in this way. He says, you know, they are an ever-expanding circle of promises. That's what these verses from 3 to 8 are like, showing us the immediacy of God's presence in our lives. I want to conclude, but I confess that I'm not much of a lover of poetry. Poetry doesn't tend to float my boat, as we say. But I want to read you a poem that I suspect you probably will have come across at some point in your lives. It's a poem called The Footprints, and it reads like this. It says, one night a man had a dream. He dreamed he was walking along the beach with the Lord. Across the sky flashed scenes from his life. For each scene he noticed two sets of footprints in the sand, one belonging to him and the other to the Lord. When the last scene of his life flashed before him, he looked back at the footprints in the sand. He noticed that many times along the path of his life there was only one set of footprints. He also noticed that it happens at the very lowest and saddest times in his life. This really bothered him, and he questioned the Lord about it. Lord, you said that once I decided to follow you, you'd walk with me all the way. But I've noticed that during the most troublesome times in my life, there was only one set of footprints. I don't understand why, when I needed you the most, you would leave me. The Lord replied, my son, my precious child, I love you. I would never leave you during your times of trial and suffering. When you see only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. That was the love story that I've been reading about
with Margaret Fischer Powers and her husband Paul. It's a very interesting story. It's quite amazing. It tells many tales of how God was incredibly present with them at very, very difficult times, and the ways in which he sent people alongside just when they needed it. It's quite an amazing story. I encourage you to read it. I'll leave it at the front. So this morning, as we contemplate everything that lies ahead, we don't know what's in our lives, we don't know what we're going to face tomorrow, we don't know what a day will hold. But what we do know is that the Lord's presence is with us. That we can say with confidence, just like this psalmist. Because you know, I look to the hills, I look to the future, and I know that I need your help, Lord. And I know, not only that, that your help is the help I need. It comes from you. You're the maker of heaven and earth. And you, it is your presence that I really want, that I covet. You know, I want to bring it full circle. This morning we were thinking at the beginning about absent fathers. And as Christians, we can never say, you know, my father is absent. We have a very present, an ever-present father in our lives. That is the reality for each one of us. Let me read you, finally, a verse from Hebrews 13. It says this. It says, because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. So we say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? My prayer is that for all of us, without exception, that this psalm will be a help to us. And that when we come to those times of difficulty in our lives, we'll recognise that God particularly comes alongside us at those times. At those times, he lifts us. He takes us in his arms. Let us walk in faith, knowing that he is our help. May God be glorified. Amen.